Welcome to The Human Factor. I'm Kimberly Diamond, and today we're talking about real challenges and real wins behind building strong teams. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome to The Human Factor. I'm your host, Kim Diamond. Our show explores what really drives performance and trust and growth inside organizations, and it's the people. So today's guest is someone who understands people at every level of the business, Vikita Poindexter. She is the CEO of Poindexter Consulting and nationally recognized HR and DEI expert with over 30 years of experience solving some of the toughest organizational challenges. She's known as the HR fixer. I love that. She's worked with leaders to prevent lawsuits, strengthen their culture, build workplaces defined by fairness and accountability. So in our first segment, we're going to talk about the silent struggle that small businesses face every day. People issues. We have turnover, there's burnout, there's lack of structure, challenges. You know, all of that can hold the growth of the organization back. You know, people are very vital to that growth aspect. So welcome, Vikita. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, thank you, Kimberly. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So let's dive in. And so, you know, we see from time and time again where businesses get caught up focusing on sales and operations and the bottom line, and they underestimate the importance of the people and how they're being affected and how they're working. So why do you think that some small businesses overlook the importance of this process and HR in that growth journey?
Sure. So HR becomes the last component when you're thinking about small businesses, right? They think about, you know, social media, marketing, advertising, how they're going to get their, you know, products or services out. And then the people don't become an issue until they become an issue. And it's all, you know, all of a sudden it's, okay, now I've got this employee relations matter. What do I need to do? So instead of doing the actual opposite, because employees are your greatest asset, if you take care of the employees will take care of the business. If you don't, that's where litigation comes in. That's where challenges within the workplace comes in. That's where conflict comes in. Most small business owners really don't understand that, right? And, you know, they're such in a hurry to kind of to get the business started. They, you know, don't take time in the hiring process. You know, my philosophy to all of business owners is hire slow, but fire fast. And so they really don't understand that that's the most important piece is the people, not necessarily your products and services.
Right. And what do you think are some of the most common people problems that really can damage a business?
Communication. I think that is the core foundation of all challenges is communication. Right. Number one, people don't listen to understand. People listen to respond. Leaders and business owners are trying to navigate a multitude of things. And so they really don't take the time just to kind of connect with their people. So communication is the number one caveat to that. Number two, a lack of authenticity. People are not square pegs. They're going to fit in wrong holes. You are dealing with individuals that have feelings and emotions just like yours. And so as a leader, you have to also, as a leader business owner, because I'm both, you cannot forget where you came from. At some point in your life, you were an employee. And so you have to treat people the way you want to be treated, because if not, if people don't feel valued, they don't feel like they're an integral part of the organization or an integral part of the team, that's where challenges come in.
Exactly. It's very important to listen to the people. We know that coming from the recruiting side, absolutely. It's very important in the beginning. Well, then how can small business leaders build a strong culture without a big budget or big teams?
Sure. So you don't need a whole lot of people to be able to do the work, right? I mean, you know, the core fundamentals of the positions that you have, you really need to do your due diligence. And what most leaders do or small business owners do is they have a need and they run out and try to fill it instead of really trying to sit back and do an analysis on what specifically do I need this particular individual to do, right? Because a lot of employees can multitask, so really define what the job description is going to be. And a job description literally is just listing the duties and responsibilities. What is it that you're looking for this individual to accomplish? And then what are the skill sets that you are looking for them to do? Now, depending upon where you're located, obviously there's compliance when it comes to, you know, pay and benefits and things like that. But it's going to cost you more if you don't do it the right way than if you just take that time out to do that. You don't need to hire a really large recruiting firm. You don't have to, post thousands of dollars on some of the LinkedIn profiles. You literally can just put together the job description, have conversations, right? Make sure you're not asking anything illegal from a state or federal perspective, but get to know the individual that is coming on board. So take your time with that and do your due diligence before you just start hiring people. And that includes family members as well.
I agree. And a lot of times, like you said, they'll just slap together a job description and they'll barely, and then half the time they don't even really follow it, right? And or they'll overlook certain aspects, or those aspects won't come into play. And the candidate's looking at that information and putting themselves into that position with respect to their experience. Then they start the interview process and it's completely off the mark. So I think that you're right. It's very important that you really understand what you're looking for. And it's not
Absolutely.
just the bullet points, right, in the description. So I think that
Absolutely.
that's really key. I do struggle with that a lot of times when I'm talking to them. Like, I need to understand what you're looking for in this person. I see what you expect from an experience or qualification standpoint, but there's more to it than that. No, so
Absolutely.
do you have a story you can share with us about a small business that fixed its people's issues and then they thrived?
Sure, that's every day in my world.
Which is great.
It is, right? And so and I think that's the reason why I love human resources, right? Because the first word is human. You're dealing with people that are just like you. And so I have a particular client, and still my client today. I think they've been my client for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. They were struggling with some internal conflict between leadership and employees. And so I said, listen, the employee and the supervisor are more alike than they are different. And so they're clashing because number one, both of them are operating out of feelings and not facts. And so as a leader, you can't operate out of feelings, you have to operate off of facts. Now, what I mean by that is you can't be guided by your feelings, because I can't tell you that you can't feel anything. The employee had the separate situation. Well, I feel this way or the other way about whatever it is that the directive that the supervisor was giving them. So I coached them both. I said, first of all, both of you are not responsible for how the other individual feels, right? Because feelings are subjective. Your feelings may change after you have a cup of coffee. Your feelings may change after you have something to eat. So feelings are subjective. What you need to be able to do is stop sending these emails back and forth. So for the next 30 days, you're going to have old-fashioned verbal communication. Like you literally have to pick up the phone and converse with one another. It was one of the toughest things that they had to do because they didn't want to talk to each other. Fast forward now, they have excellent communication. I'm not asking them to go out and be best friends and eat bonbons together. I'm saying have mutual respect within the workplace. But that dynamic shifted so drastically until not only are they working better as colleagues, they have realized that what I told them from the very beginning, that you're more similar than you are different, was actually a fact. And so now their relationship has shifted. They're working cohesively together. They are really training other individuals on how to do that. That particular employee now has been promoted into a leadership role. And so now they're practicing what they've been preaching. So it's been really good to watch that transformation.
Well, that's great. It's great you were able to help them identify that because obviously they weren't seeing it, right?
No,
So that was
right.
that's great. Awesome. Good job for your group. Well, then when we go back to, what's a simple practice somebody at a small business can adopt now to help their teams?
So one of the first thing that you can do is just have check-ins, right? I mean, people want to know how much you know. I mean, how much you care before how much you know. And so people spend more time with the people that they work with than the people that they live with. And
True.
so they also want to feel that they're an integral part of the organization. It's not always about pay. It's not always about benefits. Sometimes people's employment is their escape from life that sometimes can be a little challenging. So one of the things that I always recommend is do a 5-minute check-in with your team. Hey, how are you? How are things going? Is there any challenges that you're experiencing? Is there anything that I can help you navigate through, whether it's work-related or personal? Make sure you have a really good employee assistance program. And that is virtually inexpensive for business owners. It's a lot cheaper than offering health insurance. But these provide resources for individuals that may be going through things that are not work-related. So check-ins are the first thing that I highly recommend. Number two, make sure that you have job descriptions developed because you're trying to hold employees accountable to certain things and they don't know what they're being held accountable to. So I would tell all small business owners to stop, reset, especially coming up on the new year, reset, make sure you've done your due diligence with offer letters, job descriptions, check in with your employees, making sure that you're really understanding the style of communication that your employee has. Have team meetings, get your employees' inputs on the day-to-day operations of the business. You hire people to be able to help you fulfill whatever vision that you have. Let them do it, not micromanage. So those are some key pointers that I would be able to give small business owners.
That's excellent. Excellent. Absolutely agree with that. Well, we'll be right back. Up next, we're going to dive into leadership accountability and why it's hard for leaders to look into the mirror. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more stories, insights, and real-world strategies for leading with purpose. This is The Human Factor on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Kimberly Diamond, and you're watching The Human Factor on Now Media Television. Let's dive back into today's conversation.
Welcome back. I'm joined by HR and DEI powerhouse Vikita Poindexter. In this segment, we're unpacking a tough truth. It's accountability. Many leaders struggle to take responsibility for their part in workplace issues. When it happens, it can cause problems with trust and performance, and can quickly erode the team dynamic. So what do you think happens when leaders avoid accountability, Vikita? I've seen it in various environments that I have worked in, and it's always somebody else's, it's somebody else's error. Somebody else did it, not me, type of thing.
Sure. So the first thing that I say, Kimberly, is leader, your team is a reflection of your leadership. So if your team is not functioning correctly or not doing the things that you need them to do, then you have to take a look in the mirror to see, because you're the coach, you're the leader, you're the one that sets the tone and responsibility. And you have to be able to, even as leaders, we're continuously growing, right? And so we haven't perfected this thing called leadership. I mean, I've been in business now for 26 years. I've been in HR now for 35 years. Next year is still going to be 35. And the year after that is still going to be 35. Because right? I am not going to date
myself.
You're not
going up on the number.
I'm not going up on the number, right?
And I hear you.
We have to take a look in the mirror to say, what is it that I can do to redefine myself? And so leaders have to be able to do that, because if you don't, the employment dynamics have shifted. You know, mm-hmm. You have different generations within the organization. You have
exactly.
Baby boomers, you've got Gen X's, you've got millennials, and then you mm-hmm. have Gen Z'ers. And you can't lead Gen Z'ers like you do baby boomers. That is not going to happen.
Yeah.
And if you want a successful team, you have to stop, take a look in the mirror and say, okay, what is it that I can do differently so that, number one, my team knows that I support them. I'm here to help them with the trajectory of their career path. If there's conflict, what portion did I play in that, if any? And then how do I resolve that? So leadership starts with be leader, because you're also in a position where you are grooming and coaching your future leaders. And if you don't have that mindset, then that's a challenge in itself, because you should always be training and coaching your replacement. Because at some point in time, you either want to elevate yourself as a leader to the next position, or if you're the small business owner, you want to grow. So, I mean, I think that's the first thing. You have to be willing to say, just because you take a look in the mirror to say, how do I need to improve, doesn't mean that you have failed at something, right? Failure is an event, not a person.
Right, exactly. It's not that they failed. And it even starts in the beginning, as I see this when it comes to the hiring process, right? When they are looking for that person to join their team, they really need to take ownership to that process. And the leaders really need to be engaged in that. And sometimes, it, like you said, they make decisions and I don't think that they think it through the whole dynamic of their team. And, you know, it's almost like, oh, shiny ball. I gotta take this one, right? So I agree with you. They really need to look in the mirror and see how they're going from the beginning of that process through their team, through their coaching and everything. So that's wonderful. They absolutely need to take your advice on those processes. Well, what happens when the team's trust when they avoid accountability? Like, what do you see the change in the dynamic when they have that avoidance personality at that point?
It erodes the team. I mean, that's the biggest piece. It's destructive to the team. You know, when trust is lost, you might as well start creating exit strategies because it's very hard to build trust back when it's lost. Number one, it's hard to build trust from the very beginning from an employee or employee perspective. Once you have it, you have to be able to nurture it. You have to also remember that employees are not square pegs that are going to fit in round holes, right? You
Exactly.
have to be
Exactly.
vested. You know, I tell people this all the time. Everybody wants to be a leader, right? They like the title, they like the pay, they like the benefits, they like the alleged, and I use that word, freedom and flexibility, because as a leader, you do not have that if you are a true authentic leader. But they don't understand that when you're dealing with individuals, you're dealing with people, right? And people are not processes and systems. And so you are there to help navigate their career path while they're currently at your organization. You also have to be able to understand they're not going to retire from you. And so what you want to be able to do is allow them to be the best version of themselves while they're currently working with you, so that when they continue on in their career path, you have inputted or inputted, it's not the necessary word I'm looking for, but help them with whatever it is that they're trying to achieve in their career path. Those are traits of great leaders. The default to that is lawsuits, legal actions, employee complaints, harassment complaints. These are things that happens when a leader doesn't take accountability or responsibility. When you're consistently pivoting that over to the employee is not going to just take that lane down. There's calls to HR. There is Googling how to sue my employer on the internet, right? And they give them a
Right.
step-by-step guideline, let alone ChatGPT or any AI services. It'll tell them exactly what to do and who to call. So leaders have to be even more in tuned on making sure that they take accountability, even if they feel like they haven't done something wrong. It's not about wrong or right. It's about I'm the one that's in charge of this department. I'm the one that's overseeing this group of employees. I need to make sure that I've done my due diligence.
Exactly. And then how do they get that courage to look in the mirror and make those changes? Because some, you know, it's it again, avoidance, lack of accountability kind of all goes together, right? So how do you teach a leader to kind of take that step back, look in the mirror, and make those adjustments?
It's all about, again, it stems back from that first statement I talked about is communication. One of the things I talk to leaders is like, listen, we have got to kind of see what your leadership style is, because that's part of the challenge outside of communication. Most leaders do not know their leadership style. They don't know their communication style. So what they could be trying to communicate could be received a different way. So number one, do you know your style of communication? Do you know your style as a leader? Because once you know those two things, then your recruiting becomes better, because then you will recruit people that you actually know can work with your style of leadership. We also have to remember that most leaders are promoted within the organization, right? If we're talking outside of small business, you know, they've got great numbers, they've done this, you know, great attendance, great attitude. Let's promote them. Okay, well, that's great that they've been a great employee. Doesn't make them a great leader. You know, leadership
Exactly.
is not something that you learn. It's something that you're taught. It's something that you learn. And so when you don't take accountability, you're literally saying that I know it all and I don't need to learn anything else. As a leader, as an individual, as a human being, you need to always be in a constant state of learning. And that's what a leader needs to be able to do. Just like you want that employee to be the best version of themselves for you, you need to be the best version of yourself for them. You got to pull off that pride and say, I don't know it all. I don't have all the answers. Let me take a deep look at myself first before I can tell somebody else to correct what I think their deficiencies are.
Well, that's very true. And that's not easy for a leader or even anyone, you know,
It's
to
not
sit
easy
back
at all.
and take that personal deep dive. But it's very encouraging that you bring that to the forefront when you're dealing with these leaders versus, you know, I think that's very important and it's a great attribute of your organization. So, well, can you share an example where a leader's personal accountability transformed the workplace?
Sure. I have a CEO of an organization that's a small business. I think they have less than 25 employees. And this leader, this CEO is very headstrong, my way or the highway type of mentality. employees' family members as well. And their style of leadership just was not working. And so we were getting constant complaints regarding that because our firm is sometimes the HR department, but we don't have an office on site. So we get phone calls from employees and they have just had it. And so they were like, I'm just leaving. I was like, okay, wait, let's press pause. Everybody calm down. I picked up the phone and I called the leader and I said, let's have coffee because some conversations don't need to happen over the phone. We met for coffee and I said, listen, you had a problem within your organization. And I'm very direct and straight to the point when I'm trying to get something across to them. I said, it's you. You are the problem. And I said, I know you personally, and I know you don't have any malice intent, but your style of communication and the way you are micromanaging is like a tyrant. And so we need to change that because you're about to have a revolt with your team. So they're not going to sue you. They're just going to all pack up and leave. And then what are you going to do? I said, that's including your own children. And so it was a wake-up call. I said, so we need to fix that. So where is this stemming from? And so I had to peel all the way back to childhood for them to be able to see you are dealing with unresolved issues as a child that is impacting your ability to be successful as a leader and a CEO of your organization. So let's get you into some coaching. Let's get you into some therapy. And we need to, and therapy is not a bad word, people. Let's deal with some of these unresolved issues because what we're starting to see over the last 2 years is an increase of individuals from a leadership level, C-suite and above, that are dealing with unresolved issues as children that have just trickled. And it has created them to be the person that they are today. So you have to deal with the stuff that you refuse to reveal. You can't heal from it. And so went through that for like 6 months, was a total shift in their mindset, how they interacted with individuals, how they led their team, how they started recruiting individuals. And this is and now they've doubled in size. And the same employees that were there for them that were ready to do this revolt was like, we don't know what happened, but we like the new you. And it's not the new you, it's the improved you.
Improved you, right? Went through the issues, found out what was underlying, and having them react as they were. So that's wonderful. What an exciting story. That's great. That is wonderful. Well, Makita, for those who want to learn more about your coaching and consulting work, where can they connect with you and find your resources?
Absolutely. So you can reach out to us at, pcghr.net. Definitely catch me on LinkedIn. I'm definitely one of those individuals that's on LinkedIn. But and you can also send me an email, which is vikita@pcghr.net. And I'd be more than happy to respond to you. I respond to every single email. I only turn my phone off when they tell me I need to do a system update. So feel free to reach out. Feel free to reach out to me. And I will do whatever I can. I just like to be able to equip leaders to be the best version of themselves that they could possibly be.
That's great. Thank you. Well, coming up, we're staying with Vikita. We're going to talk about the fear of speaking up and why employees often stay silent, even though they know something's wrong and that they really should be sharing something with their leaders. So stay with us. But remember, you can catch all your favorite Now Media programs on Roku TV.
We'll be right back with more stories, insights, and real-world strategies for leading with purpose. This is The Human Factor on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Kimberly Diamond, and you're watching The Human Factor on Now Media Television. Let's dive back into today's conversation.
Welcome back to The Human Factor. We're continuing our conversation with Vikita Poindexter, and this time we're talking about silence. Many employees are afraid to speak up, and even when something feels wrong, because they fear retaliation or they feel like they may not be understood. But silence can be just as damaging as conflict. So, Vikita, why do you think so many employees hold back instead of speaking up?
It's fear. Fear breeds it from the very beginning. They fear retaliation. They fear that they're going to lose their job. So that is the main reason why employees don't speak up. Not understanding by you being silent, you are actually contributing to the problem. And so most employees just, one of the things that we just get the biggest complaint is, well, I don't want this person to find out because they're going to do this or they're going to do that, or, I can't afford to lose my job. So fear is the biggest culprit when it comes to employees not wanting to speak up.
Yeah, I understand that. And so you probably see a lot of that in HR because that's where they feel they can go and speak openly and safe about certain things when and then hopefully, you can work with them and the leader if it's something that, needs to be resolved there. But you're right, I've worked with many team members in the past and I would encourage them when they had challenges. I'd be like, you need to mention it. You need to speak about it. So I think it's very important.
It is.
But
It's
what are
really about, let me just say this, Kimberly. It's really about them also understanding you have a voice. It's how you use your voice when you're speaking up, right?
True.
And so you have to make sure you have your emotions in check because when they see things coming or things are happening, the first thing they want to do is get emotional. And then when you get emotional, you're not really communicating in the best way. And so before you actually bring a concern, whether it's to whomever, you need to really make sure that you can keep your emotions in control, but you have to be able to speak up to say, okay, this is what's going on. This is what's going on. And I want to be able to resolve it. So how can we work together to resolve it instead of finger pointing? Because that's when everybody gets defensive and that's when challenges become even more, or conflict becomes even more toxic within the work environment.
It does. And if the leader, when you're working with a leader and you can tell a leader maybe is not very open or receptive, it makes it more challenging because you really, like you said, you really do need to sit down and get your voice right, because you're trying to play that personality and make sure that it comes across the way you want it to. And some people don't have that comfort level. They're afraid and the fear is catching them. I totally agree with that. I have been there myself. Well, what are the risks of an organization when silence becomes the norm?
A very non-productive organization. That's what happens. The turnover rate is extremely high. You're not getting the best work from the employees that you think you need to get or that you will be receiving. It's an environment where it's just breeding fear. And so it's a slowly toxic environment. So when employees don't have that flexibility that they can speak up, and I mean a real authentic opportunity. I mean, we can write open door policies all day long, but if you're not living those out as your leadership, then that's a challenge. And sooner or later, it's going to erode or explode. And that's where these multi-million dollar lawsuits come in. That's where class action lawsuits come in. Small business owners need to be able to understand you are not exempt from class action lawsuits. It only takes two in the state of California for that to happen. So silence typically will breed legal action. And what leaders, CEOs, C-suite leaders, people that are just starting out in leadership have to be able to understand is when employees are complaining or they have concerns, you cannot take it personal. It's not something that's personal. So you have to be able to, just like the employee, as the leader, you have to be able to keep your feelings in check to be able to understand this is not a personal attack against you, right? An employee could be discussing something, and that is their perception. Perception is not always reality, but that's the reality that that employee lives in. And so you have to be able to deal with them in that reality. And so you can't take things personal. As a leader, you have to be willing to say, what I'm focused on one thing, and that's a resolution to a problem.
Right. And so that's how they create psychological safety, so people feel safe to share. I mean, that's a technique. It's not easy for leaders. Some leaders are just very caught up in their day. They have their own stressors that are reflecting, right? Making that an uncomfortable communication between the two. So I think that there's a way that they can create a safer space to speak.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the new, I like to say psychological safety now is one of those buzzwords that we're hearing a lot of. Well,
Okay.
employees are now saying, I don't feel psychologically safe. And I will tell you, initially, I was like, what the heck does that mean? What do you mean you don't feel
I was
psychologically
gonna say
safe?
that's a new word for that's a new two words for me. I haven't heard that one yet, so okay.
I was like, I had to go ask my millennial. I have a Gen Z and a millennial. I had to go ask my daughter, what does this mean? An employee doesn't feel psychologically safe within the work environment. And when she explained it to me, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Okay. But leaders have to be able to understand that. Again, you have to be able to understand all of the dynamics because that is a term that is frequently used from millennials on down. And I'm not stereotyping generations, but that's just the reality. Gen X's and Gen and baby boomers, we didn't use psychologically safe. And so what employees are saying is, I don't feel safe working in this environment. Like my mental health is being taxed in this environment. And so leaders have to be able to pivot and shift and really be able to understand what this new terminology means, how it is impacting their teams at every level, and be able to adapt. That's why I said this constant state of learning is crucial. You've got to be able to consistently learn, because how you communicate to one, you cannot communicate to the other. They're not all square pegs and round holes. And so if you're a more mature leader, then you really have to be able to understand how these individuals and these other generations receive information.
That's a 100% right. That's one of the things that I've recently been, peeling back is all the different dynamics that you have based on the different generations. We have people working longer now, people coming into the workforce, so you have a complete mixed bag of people that have gone through different things with respect to the world in general. So just the way we work and so forth. So yes, as a leader, it's obviously become more complex. And it's not all
Absolutely.
the same. You're not all talking to the same generation anymore. And the world is ever changing every minute. So, like you said, it continuing to stay up on how different people think and the different things that are affecting them, whether it's at work or outside of work. I mean, that's become a huge factor. People used to come to work and work was work and outside was outside. Now outside comes in with work. So, it's a completely different environment from that perspective as well. Well, can you give an example when speaking up changed the course of a workplace for better?
Sure. Let's see, which story do I tell you? We have so many. So we have this one client that provides services to elementary schools to ensure that they're safe, right? Security services, and I don't think that they will mind me sharing this. They're a security firm that provides security services for schools to make sure that we are protecting our children while they're at school because of everything that is going on in the world with school shootings.
Yes.
Employees were really concerned about doing certain tasks, not wanting to put themselves in jeopardy as a result of that. And so, one thing that I absolutely have an affinity for this CEO is he listens to his people. Like, he is boots on the ground. He literally is going into the schools, having conversations with his employees, trying to figure out how is it that we can do things better? How can I keep my security team safe, as well as keeping the children safe? And so he doesn't have all the answers, but what he does is he's relying on his team to provide them the answers. And so once they're giving him ideas and suggestions, he evaluates them and then he inputs them. And then he is literally talking to the employees, saying, okay, your teammate, your because they're not employees in his mind, they're team members. Your team member is one of the ones that came up with this idea. It wasn't my idea. So one, he gives credit where credit is due. He's created an environment where it's an open door. Like, employees can come talk to him about anything, even things that are not related to work, because the majority of things that happen in the workplace are not work related. It's this thing called life that people are trying to navigate. You're in an environment where you're dealing with children, and not all children are, princesses and princes, right? So some children are very challenging in their communication. And so employees, they have the ability just to express their concerns and their frustrations. And he was one that just said, I'm not going to respond to this by an email. I'm going to go to the school site and have conversations with my team to make sure that everything is good. That was a huge turnaround. This is an individual that started out with, I don't know, 20 employees and now have a couple hundred.
Wow, what a great, oh, that's great. But I think it is very important. When I was in a leadership role, when I had a team, I was the same way. I was open door. If we need to talk about something, it may not be about work, but their personal life is a, it can come in and affect their daily, their daily productivity. And I didn't want them to feel that they couldn't talk about it and be concerned that they were maybe having an off day, right? For whatever reason. So I think that's super important, having that open door, that complete transparency and communication. There are some things you shouldn't talk about, but for the most part, there are, lots of things that work well to share to get a better understanding of what's going on. So, well, then do you have some, go ahead.
It also gives a better idea on who you're talking to and who your employees are. I'll use myself for an example. I know everything about my employees, right? I know if they're married, they're single, parents still living, birthdays, children, children being sick, any challenges that they go through. They pick up the phone, they call me, they cry, they fuss, they're upset, whether it's life, whether it's work. I want to know. I want to know what's impacting you because I care about you. And so for me, that's very important. Number one, it builds trust. You trust me enough to share some of your most personal information. I, on the other hand, as a leader, I share as well, right? I am not always, happy. Everything is not always rainbows and unicorns. I get frustrated and irritated and annoyed as a leader as well. But I also share some of my most deepest pains, challenges, and everything like that so that they understand you're dealing with a human being just like you. I just may own the company, I just may sign your paycheck. But I'm boots on the ground with you as well. I think that makes a huge impact. Leaders now have to be even more transparent, but authentic in how you
Authentic.
lead your people. You need to be authentic because people can discern that from the very beginning if you're not honest and
That's
transparent.
right. That's right. 100%. Well, stay with us. Up next, we're gonna wrap up our segment. We're gonna look at how HR can balance the rules with humanity, why policy should feel more proactive and not punishing. Stay with us.
We'll be right back with more stories, insights, and real-world strategies for leading with purpose. This is The Human Factor on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Kimberly Diamond, and you're watching The Human Factor on Now Media Television. Let's dive back into today's conversation.
Welcome back to The Human Factor. Don't miss a second of this show or any of the Now Media TV shows streaming live on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup and bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to The Human Factor anytime on Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more. Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. Welcome back. In this segment, we're taking a deeper look at how HR policies that are meant to protect often end up looking like punishment. Vikita Poindexter joins us to discuss how leaders can bring empathy and understanding back into the rule book. So, Vikita, why do you think that people do misinterpret, those outline of those guidelines as punishment?
Well, I think it's because how they're written, right? Oftentimes policies and procedures are written from a punitive perspective. And so you can write the policies and procedures where, yes, there's the accountability piece, but they don't have to come off as being punitive. I think the other piece of it also, Kimberly, is how it's communicated, right? And you'll hear a theme in my entire conversation is communication, how you're communicating the policies and procedures. And so the way that you explain it to employees is the way that they're going to receive it. And so they can read it, but you also need to be able to explain it to let them know this is for your protection as well. It's just not always about the organization. So I think that's part of the challenges when it comes to policies and procedures. It goes from not just being directives and accountability to let's do this cohesively. Let's work together to ensure that we're doing everything that we need to do to protect the company as well as you as employees of the company as well.
Right. And I think people do get confused by that. And it is how it's relayed. So can you share an example where a policy was written with good intention, but it ended up not coming across as such?
Sure. So, I'm in California, right? And so California employment law is extremely strict.
Very
I
strict.
tell people if you can do business in California, you can do business anywhere.
Exactly.
But we have other states that are following along some of the challenges. But there's a policy in California that's our meal and rest period policy, which basically says non-exempt employees, you must take a meal period, a 30-minute unpaid meal period by a certain time period. And if you don't take it, then you could be faced with disciplinary action up to and including termination. And so they're like, well, I don't want to take it. I understand. But this is the requirement. So that is one policy that we cannot deviate from non-exempt employees. But how I communicate it to employees is this. You are working 8 hours a day. Within that fourth to fifth hour, you need a break. I don't care if you eat. I don't care if you check social media. I don't care what you do. But I want you off the clock and go relax. Sit. I don't care if you sit in your car if the temperature allows it, but this is your time. And no manager or supervisor can tell you not to take that 30-minute meal period. If so, I want to know about it. So it's all in how it's communicated. So employees now are like, oh, okay, this is my time. I don't have to be worried about this, that, and the other, versus you need to take that 30-minute meal period. If not, I'm going to write you up. And I also tell employees when it comes to this particular policy, if you get to a point where you're super busy within that day, you can sign a meal period waiver, so to speak, but that should be the rare, not the norm, because I want to see that you are taking a timeout from work. We all need that mental health break from that standard process for 8 hours a day. And so it went from something that was being negative and punitive to, oh, this is actually for my benefit. We rewrote it to where it's for the benefit. We're still compliant within the law, and we communicated it so employees really could understand that this is a benefit for them, not something that the employee was demanding.
So do you think that that was because it was, you mentioned it was 30 minutes of unpaid time. Is that the reason that they maybe were trying to not comply? Because
No,
I mean, I know there's just, go ahead.
it was more so if you don't do it, I'm going to write you up. Because the law is
Oh,
so strict on that. Wage and hour in
okay.
California is very, very strict. And so
Very.
employers are doing everything that they can to stay compliant. And so, in an effort to do that, they are writing policies that are coming off more punitive because they're being punished and suffering fines and penalties if they don't adhere to it. And I'm like, listen, we can do both. We're going to be compliant with the law, but we're also going to afford this time for the employee. Let's rewrite this so that it's more friendlier, still compliant, and let's communicate it differently. Once you get hit with fines and penalties for wage and hour violations in California, you're like, nope. Strict policy, this is where we're doing it. We're not deviating. I get that, but there's still a different way to be in compliant, write the policy different so it's been received differently. So I think that's an example on how we're still able to be compliant and change the narrative of no, you're not, this is not a punitive action. This is actually a self-care action.
Which is exactly what we're just going to lead into. I think that's the best way to approach it because it's the truth. I mean, who wouldn't? Or I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but I would look forward to taking my lunch break.
Right.
So, you know, it's surprising that people have to feel like they're going to be punished if they don't. But I get it. I mean, it's the precedent that's been set by by California. But as an employee, I'd be like, I'm fine with it. I don't know, but I guess you have some that kind of shifted it into a negative connotation based on the way it was written.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's the way that it's
Okay.
written and the way that it's
Yeah.
communicated. And so
Right.
employers in California and in the Pacific portion of the country,
Right.
the compliance piece for them is so difficult and so challenging for them to kind of navigate. And so when they're writing these policies, it's I'm just focused on compliance, so I'm not courting fines and penalties. But it's like you can be compliant and still be have the human factor in it as well when you're talking to the employees. So you have to be mindful of that. And so we come in, we make sure we rewrite the policy. So number one, it enforces compliance. Whether there's ever an audit, the organization is compliant. But two, making sure that the employee understands. So the employee doesn't know anything about the compliance piece, they could care less.
That's right. That's right. They don't. But then more and more, in this case, you're probably having to discuss that more and more than you would have in the past. You know, this is a compliance. This is for your benefit, and reiterating that. But I can understand where the employers have gotten to the point where they're just terrified that they're going to misstep. So it's yeah. So it's kind of that trickle down effect, and it's great that you're helping them reorganize that language so that it's perceived, better and not so threatening.
Right.
Well, when leaders realize that their policies are damaging their morale, what's the first step they should do to change that culture?
Rewrite them. That is the
Like
first
we just said, rewrite them. I mean,
you
it's
have
just the
to
bottom line.
you have to rewrite the policies, right? And so you have to be able to understand, you have to be able to understand your demographics of employees. And so even if you have to write policies where there's a bunch of legal language, because we do that, you're just not going to sit an employee in front of a computer and have them on board because half of the stuff that they're reading, they're not going to understand. And again, you got to keep the human into the process, right? And I
Right.
talk about this when it comes to human resources. We don't have these fancy titles. We're not chief people officer. We're human resources because the first word is human. We're dealing with individuals. So as an individual that worked in corporate America, what is it that I and didn't like some of the processes? I am intentional to make sure that those processes are different. Onboarding is crucial for building culture. Onboarding is crucial
Absolutely.
for your new hire. I'm not going to stick them in front of a computer with 50 pages of documents and say, here, sign them, because they're not reading them anyway. I'm going to do a one-on-one or a group in person, explain to them what they're signing, explain the policies and procedures with them. We're going to start off on a good foot, because how you start an employee off will dictate the trajectory of their lifetime within the organization. So we're explaining policies and procedures. So one of the things I tell employers all the time is we're going to rewrite policies twice a year because the dynamics of things change and the law changes twice a year in California. And then we're going to educate our employees on this. And then we're going to communicate why this is a benefit for the employee. And so, for example, we have Cal OSHA compliance. You know, that's the one that handles all of our industrial welfare within California. So accidents, heat and health and safety, all of that, making sure the employees are safe while at work. Yes, for the employer, it is cumbersome, but it's also for the safety and well-being of the employee. So how do you tie the two together? And so that's part of one of the questions that you asked me earlier about why do small business owners not take HR, seriously? This is one reason why, because if they don't, it is going to cripple the culture. And you have to do things right from the very beginning. So making sure your policies or procedures are written in a friendly, humanitarian kind of way. That's the best way that I can explain it. Because if not, it's going to crucify your culture.
Exactly. And I know a lot of times leadership or, the enterprise in itself will think that it's just they're getting in the way. They're creating more than needs to be, right? And it's time consuming and it takes away from the production. But it ultimately, if it's not done this way, like you said, it will kill the culture. And if you then where are you? But oftentimes, though, you hear that, well, it's like, why do we have to do this? Well, there are reasons that this has come into play. It's not just somebody just didn't kind of pull it out of the air, right? And there's been either instances or reasons or situations that have warranted that that there need to be adjustments made. So
Absolutely.
it's wonderful that you're looking at it from the human side and not just from, like you said, sit down and let's go through this. You have 50 videos to watch. And a quiz at the end. Yeah, right. Okay. And you could take it as many times as you'd like. Well, this has been wonderful. Great information. I'm super happy that we were able to connect today to walk through this, Vikita. Thank you. I would like you to take a minute and be able to share with the audience where they can reach you and reach out to you about continuing this conversation or getting some advice from your organization.
Well, I appreciate that. And thank you so much for having me. So again, I'm Vikita Poindexter. I'm the president and CEO of Poindexter Consulting Group. You can find me and reach me number one on LinkedIn. And or you can reach me through our website, which is pcghr.net. And you can email me directly at Vikita@pcghr.net. Would look forward to continuing this conversation with whomever may need it. It has been an absolute honor.
Thank you again. Thank you. Well, thanks for reminding us that HR is more than rules, which we often need to remember. It's about relationships, trust, understanding, the human heartbeat of every organization. As you and I talked, it's the human factor. So today we've explored how small business can overcome people challenges, how leaders can practice accountability, and how empathy can turn policy into protection. For all the viewers, remember, leadership starts with listening, and progress begins when people feel seen. I'm Kim Diamond, and this has been The Human Factor. Until next time, curious, stay human, and lead with a human heartbeat. Don't forget, watch this program on Now Media Television, which you can find on Roku TV. Thank you. Have a great day.